I'm Lillian Vasquez with Lifestyles on KVCR. Thanks for listening. The Super Bowl is this Sunday. I'll be watching the game, eating chili and munching on chips. But on today's show, I'll speak with football player and singer Sammy Grassoffi. Sammy was the first female football player at Redlands High School, right here in the Inland Empire. She went on to play professional football with the women's football team, Chicago Force. She was also the quarterback for Team USA, winning 3 gold medals. Sammy's journey is the subject of the documentary, Open Field. She's also the voice on the soundtrack for the film. Sammy shares more about the documentary, being a female football player in the 90s, and what she's doing today to add to her many accomplishments. Hey, Sammy, welcome to Lifestyles.
Thank you so much.
You played for the Women's Football Alliance. When did you fall in love with the game of football?
I fell in love with the game of football when I was 10 years old. I was living in Redlands, California, and went to the Redlands High School free technique camp that they had, and I never looked back from there.
What about it did you love at such an early age?
Well, I had been playing baseball up to that point, and I really enjoyed that. But football is just heightened. I think that the sport really, you know, shows character in a short amount of time, and it breeds this camaraderie that I haven't really experienced in any other sport, and I certainly hadn't at that point in my life.
When did you think or know that you could hold your own to the guys you were playing with or against? And, you know, when I was looking at some of the footage, you were bigger than some of the guys, especially in high school. Taller, I mean. When did you know you could hold your own?
You know, having the luxury of growing up playing the game from such a young age and being being a little bit bigger than the guys at that time, you know, at 10 years old, gave me that confidence. And then it was just, you know, holding on to it. I was lucky enough that I had really supportive teammates that helped me grow and weight lift. You know, they saw me as an equal by that point. As the guys continued to grow, they really were supportive in that. So having played it from a young age and then continuing my journey with it, I had already had the foundation of confidence with that.
Let's talk about Redlands High School, one of our local high schools here in the Inland Empire. The players named you team captain. How did you feel at that time, and how do you feel looking back at that when they decided to make you the captain?
Well, at the time, I think I was just as surprised and honored as I am now as an adult. You know, as a kid, it was pretty remarkable because I was being lifted up by my teammates, and they were letting me know that they saw me as a leader. And so that was an exciting moment and an honor when I was a kid. But as an adult, I think it's even more remarkable, you know, that back in 1999, when that occurred, it was a little bit of a different environment as far as supporting women in football. And to think that this group of young men were so supportive and disregarding a lot of talking heads around that were not necessarily supportive of me playing is really remarkable that they did that.
Now, you're talking about the guys on the football field with you. How was the community, or how were parents or other people that weren't on the field with you? How were you treated, or what was the census around the community?
Well, I think it's a lot of it's a lot of people just not knowing or not seeing, having any experience of somebody that hadn't walked that path before. And really, I think it was a protective, you know, route that a lot of folks were taking, or a protective point of view. But there were, you know, a lot of parents didn't want me out there. And I think early on, the coaches didn't necessarily want me out there. And in Open Field, you know, in the documentary that we have, we really tried to show everybody's perspective in it, because it's not a black and white subject. Everybody had their own struggles and their own things that they had to focus on. And, you know, a lot of the coaches were concerned about me getting hurt. You know, that was on them as adults, as leaders in that program. So there was a lot of difficult obstacles to overcome, and a lot of people that didn't want me out there. I just had to prove myself, you know, and once I did, they changed their point of view and changed their minds.
Now, you just made reference to the film that's just come out, Open Field, because of COVID and what a lousy year for a film to come out. But, and it's, you know, your life. Let's talk about that film that's come out. Your parents were quite supportive, not athletes, or they were show people. They liked to entertain on stage, which you obviously got that bug as well. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. But your parents were very supportive in this endeavor for their little girl to play the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they. I was very, very fortunate to have parents that let me, you know, chase my dreams. And, you know, they were supportive from the jump. I think their big thing was, if you want to do it, you know, go for it. But you have to work hard, especially in a sport like football. Not preparing can be the source of injury.
Right.
So I think that was their main concern, is that they just wanted me to be safe. As long as I was doing what everybody else was doing to protect myself in the game and to learn the game, I think that they had confidence in that. And again, once I was able to show what I could do, I think that their confidence grew and their fear subsided.
And you weren't like, and I'm not putting any position down because I wouldn't get on a field. I used to love to throw a football, but I did it socially at the beach, you know.
Yeah.
But I can really throw a football, so I just want to say. I mean,
I'm a little older now,
but I could really throw a football. It's what I used to get the attention of some of the guys on the beach, was to throw a football.
All right.
I'd always say, no, girls can't throw a football. Then I'd throw one and, you know, I'd get their attention. All right.
I will say tossing a football is a very, very strong flirting technique. So good on you for discovering it.
Oh, shoot. Now I lost my train of thought. Where was I? So you graduated from Redlands High School. You went on to Chicago because of the acting bug, right? So tell me about that and how you landed there. And then eventually that got you to women's professional football.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of that happened in high school, that transition for me. I stopped playing football that my junior year because I knew that I wasn't going to get a scholarship to play football in college, and I needed one. And I found the acting program at Redlands High School, which at the time was run by a woman named Marie Gladspock, and she was just absolutely incredible and ran the acting program very much like the football program was run. It was very structured, very much about ensemble, or if we were to translate that into sports, it would be team.
Sure.
You know, I learned a lot with that, and it gave me those same elements and gave me the same happiness that football did. And so I really threw myself into the acting program there, and she encouraged me to go for difficult scholarship opportunities, and I ended up winning first place in monologue in the state of California. And I was looking at it and getting that competitive and team elements from the acting program, and it really made me fall in love with that. In line with that, I ended up auditioning for a college. It was a conservatory, Chicago College of Performing Arts, and that took me to Chicago. But no matter how hard I tried, you know, football was still very much a part of my identity, and I still had a fire in me. Senior year of college, the office director let me know, based on this article that was in the Chicago Tribune, that there was a women's professional team in Chicago.
Wow.
And he kind of made a bet or a wager with me. He said, you know, I know you played in high school, but these girls look like they mean business. And so I went to the tryout, and I was with the Chicago Force for 9 seasons.
Our guest is Sammy Grisafi. It's her life in football. So let's talk about that time as a quarterback. Were you able to make a living? How did it work? Did the women have other jobs? Share how that league worked.
Yeah, well, yeah, we didn't really make any money. In fact, we had to fundraise to make it a possibility. You know, women's sports are, as our documentary covers, are very underfunded, and it takes a lot of effort just to be able to play. It's a difficult road, but we loved it so much that we found a way to juggle our jobs and our families and also be able to play the sport and fundraise for it. That was the reality, and so that's how we took it on. It definitely proves that there was a great love for the game with everybody involved.
Not only a great love for the game, dedication, working out, the physicality of it all, but they were, many of them, as I watched some of the film, they were paying to be there. They were paying for either their uniforms or to travel, to go to away games. They were invested of their own financial well-being because they loved the game so much and really just wanted to play.
That's correct, yeah. We had to figure out a way to make it possible because it was such a big part of who we were. And I think it fed all of our souls. And it was so valuable to us that we would do anything to be able to put on the helmet and take the field.
Let's talk about 2013. Is that when you got injured?
No, 2014.
Oh, 2014.
I had a big injury and ended up having to take a little hiatus from playing. It was a ACL and meniscus tear, which is pretty common, actually, for female athletes. And even for male athletes,
yeah.
But especially for female athletes, the numbers are higher for ACL and meniscus tears.
But you came back from that, and what did you do then?
Yeah, well, we came back, and I was called by the owner of the Chicago Force. She let me know that it was going to be the final season for the Chicago Force because financially and time-wise, it was just way too much of a demand, and she wasn't going to continue. So I was living in Los Angeles at the time. I'm also a musician, and that was my day job and still is while I was playing football. And I said, well, I want to be a part of it. You just have to figure out how to make it possible. I was running a private concert series in Los Angeles every Sunday. So I would do the private concert series, fly out on Tuesday morning to Chicago, practice and play games, and then fly back out to LA on Sunday morning and then do it every week. That would happen every single week. In 2017, we had some success. We went to the conference championship, and unfortunately, we came up short. Mm-hmm. But it was against a formidable opponent, the Boston Renegades. It was a great ending to the game for me because it really, I guess, highlighted what the most important part of the game is, and that is the relationships that are born out of the game of football. There are bonds that cannot be broken. There is something really remarkable about playing the game with people and making sacrifices, and especially for the women's game where the sacrifices aren't just physical, sacrifices of time and sacrifices of money and making it work and making a promise to your fellow teammate that you're going to show up for them. I wouldn't give that away for anything in the world.
Yeah, it truly was a dedication of women wanting to play the sport, loving the sport, and were damn good at it, right?
I'd like to think so, yeah.
After a quick break, I'll continue my conversation with football player and singer Sammy Grassoffi. You're listening to Lifestyles. I'm Lillian Vasquez. If you're just joining us, my guest is female football champion and performer Sammy Grassoffi. Her football life is documented in a new film, Open Field. Did you ever aspire to be a coach or do anything else within the football arena?
You know, I've always had great coaches. What I mean by that is I've seen how great coaches operate. It's a life dedication. I mean, in high school, Redlands High School, we had Coach Jim Walker and Coach Mauger and Olmedo. And, you know, they really dedicated their lives to the sport. And they were there Saturday mornings and every day during the week and all hours. As I got older and I played in Chicago, we had an incredible coach, Coach John Konecki, who also coaches a high school team out in Illinois. And they've been to state several times and very successful. And he's truly dedicated his life to the sport. While I love it and I would still love to be involved in some ways, I don't think coaching is for me because I've seen what it takes to be a good coach. And it's full dedication. And I just have so many other things that I'd like to do, namely with my music and performing in general, that I just don't think I could do the job justice. So coaching has never really been on my radar, although I revere coaches who do it and are wonderful mentors and dedicated to the game.
I want to talk about your music career. Obviously, some of your music is in this film, but can we go back just for a second to, as you bring up the coaches from Redlands High School, later on you were inducted into the Hall of Fame at Redlands High School. How was that day for you?
Being inducted into the Hall of Fame was pretty pretty cool. I wasn't expecting it, and then a call came out of the blue, and you know that's when we got a lot of these interviews for the film, was when I went back to Redlands High School for the induction. Mm-hmm. I got to hear their side of the story with my playing at a younger age. And that's a very rare gift to be given, is to be able to go back in time and address the other side of the story. And I think that documentary should do that. I think documentary should pose both sides of any story and let the viewer kind of make their own judgment on it. So that was actually the highlight for me was of getting inducted, was being able to go back and revisit these circumstances and these events that took place when I was younger and kind of flesh out the story.
It's also kind of like going into the teacher's lounge when you were a kid and you weren't allowed to go in that room. And then you get to see them or the coaches or whatever. And now you get to go in that room with them and go, okay, this is where all that conversation was going on or yelling or whatever it was. It's quite nice as an adult to go back and see that. Let me ask you before we jump over to your singing, can you share some of the maybe more memorable plays or games that you participated in, whether it was for the Chicago Force or Redlands, just some of the plays or games that you remember fondly?
Yeah, so I would say, you know, some of my most, I'll go in chronological, and it won't be too many, don't worry. There's a lot, but I won't share all of them. For me, I think the first game I ever played at Redlands High School was the first time I realized a long-term dream for myself, a long-term goal. And that was when I first realized it was possible to achieve something that seemed astronomical, that seemed out of reach. I think that moment really shaped me for the rest of my life. And it made me believe that really anything, no matter how out there it is possible to attain with, you know, persistence and hard work. And so that for me, I think was very, very important for me in my life. And if you watch the documentary, you'll see that it wasn't necessarily the most positive experience at the time, but it still was an achievement for me to walk out on the field, to wear the jersey, to be with my team, and also, you know, being named captain before that game. So there's a lot of really important foundational molding that happened from that experience. As an adult playing for the Chicago Force, when we lost in 2012 at Heinz Field, that was also a big shaping moment for me and caused me to really reach down deep, and then winning in 2013. You know, it just shows that you have, if you really want something, you have to work really hard for it, and persistence is a requirement. The first time I played for Team USA in 2010 was unbelievable. It was the first ever women's tackle football team that was playing internationally, and the first tournament with women. That was just an unbelievable experience, and that really felt like the tide was changing, to be able to wear a Team USA jersey and play the game that I had always loved. Those are probably the most memorable moments. And then every time on Team USA, you know, that was always just a high. In 2013 when we won the gold, in 2017 when we won the gold, it was always an honor and quite an experience to come together with women from all over the country who love the game as much as everybody else wearing the jersey and do something incredible together.
Right, representing the United States. And often, or I would guessing that many of these women were probably women you played against in other games and maybe lost to or were your competition, right?
That's right, yeah, which is quite the exercise, you know, building up an animosity for somebody and then having to come together and work with them on the same side. I think it's a lesson everybody could benefit from nowadays. A wonderful experience. And I would argue that some of those relationships are still very close bonds I keep, you know. Our rivals when we were playing for the Chicago Force were Kansas City, and I ended up playing with one of the players on there, Rusty Sowers. She's still one of my closest friends in my life. There's several players like that I just had enormous respect for and got to peek behind the curtain of who they were as humans. And I'm very close with a handful of them still, you know, years later.
Let's switch to some of your performance. I want to talk about you sang the national anthem and you really rocked it. You did your own version of the national anthem with your, I don't know if it's a ukulele or what you're playing there, but
you're right. Okay. Yes.
Still there, oh say, does You really rocked it. How was that for you?
Thank you. Well, that was a funny circumstance. We were in Finland, and nobody really knew our national anthem, the Star Spangled Banner, very well. I brought my ukulele along for downtime so that I'd just play some like songs out for the team when we were just relaxing. And I was like, well, I have my uke, I can do it. So last minute they were like, hey, I did it before the gold medal game in 2013. And that it was such a incredible moment because here I am singing the national anthem while I'm wearing Team USA on my chest and about to play the sport that I grew up loving, that I was unsure would have a dream waiting for me on the other side, because at the time there was nothing like that for women. So there was a lot of emotion charging my performance in that, because it was, you know, yet again, another realization of a dream or a goal. And in this case, it was one that I didn't even know was possible.
Your music is featured, and I guess part of the soundtrack of the film. You enjoy performing on field or on stage. What are you working on now? And with COVID, it's hurt all of us, but it's hurt the entertainment world as well. What are you doing now? What's next on your agenda?
Well, right now we're prepping to release my first full-length studio album, which is also the entire soundtrack. So every piece of music that you hear in the documentary is a song that I co-wrote and performed. I worked with these two incredible producers out in Los Angeles. One of them, his name is Coyle Preamble, and the other is Aaron Cannata, who just did a lot of the songs on the soundtrack for Happiest Season. He's a producer for Demi Lovato, so he's doing a lot of incredible stuff right now. And when we got in the studio together and we're working on these songs, and I said, I really want this to be sort of an athlete's memoir to accompany the film. So a lot of the songs kind of take you on a journey of what it is to be an athlete. We grabbed some of the live audio from when I was playing, and we were getting sound bites for the documentary. We ended up splicing it into some of the songs. So I think it's the first time ever that you'll hear live game sounds from the musician that the album is of. So playing the sport and playing the instruments or singing the song is all happening at once. There's songs that cover what it's like to go out with your bud after a game, and and also the melancholy experience of finishing a career and look at trophies from the past and jerseys and pictures, but it's also a little bit somber, and it's hard to let go of. They're almost like little golden gravestones of who you once were and what you once had. And I think every athlete goes through that, and it's difficult because it's a fleeting experience for anybody involved with any sport.
Because of COVID, the film was probably challenged in where it could be released and such. Where can the film be seen open field?
Yeah, so COVID was a bit of a wrench. And like you said, even with the album, live performance is my favorite thing to do, is to be out there in the scene and playing the song. So all of that has been put on hold. We were very fortunate to have the world premiere at the Austin Film Festival, although it was digital this last October. Right now we have submitted to several festivals for this year, which it's still, you know, we're unsure what the second half of the year is going to look like and if they'll be live or not. But right now we're waiting to hear back from festivals we've submitted to. So any festivals that we get accepted to will be listed up there at openfieldmovie.com. Until then, you know, we're just pitching it and hoping that we can get it on a big platform so that everybody can have access to it. But until then, it's the festival route, which tends to be the route for independent filmmakers that aren't backed by studios. So I guess the main thing is to sign up for the mailing list and share the trailer if you dig what you see. If you sign up for the newsletter, then you'll know when it's screening again.
Well, we will post the trailer on our website connected to this interview. What did you learn from the game of football?
I learned so much from the game of football. I learned that to be a great leader, you first and foremost have to be a great teammate, that it's not always about taking control. It's sometimes about letting go of it. I learned that as hopeless as a pursuit can seem, that's the time when you have to push hardest. You know, I call it the fourth and inches mentality, where you might just be inches away from success, but it's going to feel like the hardest slog to get there. And the most effort will be required because you just never know what's on the other side of that effort. I learned that relationships are maybe the most important thing for whatever your pursuit is. I learned that anything is changeable, no matter how stuck somebody is in one point of view, they can be changed. Their mind can be changed with action. I learned that there's always two sides to a story and an experience, and that vilifying somebody isn't necessarily productive. There's so many things that the game of football has taught me. And I guess the last thing is that don't count anybody out of anything in life, because if they're passionate about it, that means they have the most grit possible, and it's possible.
Will you watch the Super Bowl?
Yeah, most likely I'll watch it. It's still a little bittersweet for me to watch football. It makes me miss it, but I will watch. I still love the game, and I love to watch it develop. I love the mind part of the game,
the strategy and
all of those elements, which is why I loved being a quarterback. So I really enjoy watching that part and seeing how all of these moving pieces can create quite a beautiful experience. It's never a sad thing to watch a group of people who have worked so hard succeed. There's going to be a champion at the end of it, and that's always something that gets my heart beating a little harder.
All right, Sammy, thank you so much for your time. It's been great talking football with you. I'll be watching the game as well. I know who I'm rooting for. Are you willing to say who you are?
Yeah, Kansas City.
Very good. Sammy, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Hashtags won't stop. Bullets, gunshots, prime time, shot
clock. This is the arrival. To learn more about Sammy Grassoffi or the film Open Field, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles and click on today's show. For those of you that like football, enjoy the game. That's our show for this week. To hear any of our past shows, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles. You can also listen to Lifestyles on iTunes, Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. Search for Lifestyles with Lillian Vasquez on your streaming service and take the show on the go. Lifestyles is now on Facebook. Search for us online at 919-Lifestyles and give us a like. Thanks to all who helped to make this show possible, including Sharina Waugh, David Fleming, Sean Houlihan, Andrew Caravella, and executive producer Rick Dulock. Our theme music is provided by Ethan Bortnick. Join me next week at the same time for Lifestyles with me, Lillian Vasquez. Bye for now.